Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Chof Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the bottom of Daf Chof Ches Amud Beis, where a Mishnah appears. Before learning the Mishnah, let us just glance at the outside margin of our Daf. You will notice something called the Nosei. This is a topic heading in our Gemara markings Shas Ozir, which is the Shas that appears on your screen. We provide topic headings and structural notes from time to time. The topic heading is referred to as the Nosei, and the structural note is referred to by the term Mivneh. In this case, our Nosei reads, Be'inyan Kabbalah Schar Lirois Mumim Shel HaBechoros. Payment made or offered to one who inspects the blemishes of a Bechor in order to determine whether it is a Balmum. A Bechor Balmum is a situation where Bizman Hazeh, where nowadays the animal is slaughtered and eaten. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Bechor Balmum would have been slaughtered as well and not brought as a sacrifice, as is the case with a non-blemished firstborn, which is given to a Kohen and brought as a sacrifice. The blemished firstborn would be given to a Kohen and he would slaughter it outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Our Mishnah says, Hanotel schar lios roya es habachoros. If one has taken payment for evaluating a blemish on a Bechor, Ein Shochten Al Piv. We do not rely on his decision and proceed to slaughter. Rashi explains at the bottom, Ein Shochten Dilmo Mishum Agro. Maybe it's because of the money, the fee, Ka Shori Lei, that he issued a ruling of permission, that it is considered a blemish, when in fact it might not be a real blemish. The Mishnah goes on to say that we don't we won't rely on the ruling of someone who took a fee. Elim kein hoya mumche keila biyavne shetiru lo chachomim lios noitel arba isrois lebehem adaka v'shisha legasa bein tam uvein baal mum. The Mishnah goes on to tell us that unless the person who is taking the fee is a righteous person, like this person who was known Elah, that was his name, Elah of Yavne, who was not a suspect of taking money for ruling a particular way. The Chachamim actually allowed him to take 4 Isoros. It's a type, Isor is a type of coin, so it's an amount of money. That 4 Isoros was paid for the investigation of a Behema Daka, small animal, like sheep and goats, small variety animals, and 6 Isoros for the inspection of a Mum on a large variety animal. And the payment was made whether it turned out to be a Tam, unblemished, or a blemish. In other words, the payment was made for merely inspecting, not for the results. The Gemara, before going on in the Gemara, we have a Nosei, a topic heading, on the outside margin. Tam, kishetiru lokach haschar hatashlum avur psak shel mum v'gam shel tam. What is the reason that when they allowed payment to be made, that the payment would be made for either type of decision? A decision that it is blemished, or a decision that it's unblemished. The Gemara. My time off. The first issue that the Gemara deals with is what is the reason for the difference in amounts, 4 Isros for the Behemah Daka and 6 for the Behemah Gasa. So the Gemara answers, Hai nofish tirche. The behemoth gasa involves a lot of trouble. It's a large animal, and you have to investigate all of its body, and involves getting the animal to go to descend to the ground so that you can investigate it. And that with a large animal, with a cow, an ox, a bull, this involves a lot of trouble. The behema daka loy nafish tirche. It doesn't involve a lot of tircha. The Mishnah said, bein tam uvein bal mum, whether the decision is unblemished or it happens to be blemished. Bishlamo bal mum, I understand that one receives a fee for a ruling that it's a blemished animal, mishum deka shari lei. The person who requested the inspection gets benefit from that ruling. Now he can slaughter it and doesn't have to care for the animal anymore. Elo tam amai, but a ruling of it being unblemished, why should he have to pay for that kind of ruling? After all, the owner now has to continue caring for it and can't derive any benefit from it. The Gemara answers, Deim Kain, if we wouldn't have this rule that you have to pay for a tam ruling as well, Osi Lemichshede, people will arouse suspicion. The Amri, they will say, Hai Balmum Tam Hu, the animal that was inspected, that was ruled supposedly as a Balmum, in reality as a tam, is an unblemished animal. V'hai dekoshori le mishumagra, and that which a ruling of allowance of permission, a ruling of he is a balmum, is only because the inspector wants to get a fee. Therefore, we took a step of prevention and said that you will get paid even if you rule that it is a tam. And therefore, there's no more incentive to issue a ruling of it being a balmum. Well, the Gemara says ihachi, but now this arouses a new problem. Tam nami amri, a ruling of it being a tam, people will be led to say balmum hu. This animal in reality is a balmum. V'hai delo ka shari lei, and that which he doesn't issue a ruling of allowance, of permission, sovar, well, the inspector figures, ki hechi delishkol agro zimno achriti. This way, I will be able to get a second fee for a subsequent inspection in the event that it develops a blemish. The Gemara answers, no, as far as that suspicion is concerned, we've already outmaneuvered and answered, Amri, chad zimno Takinu le rabbonon, trei zimni lo takinu le rabbonon. The takona that was mentioned in the Mishnah, that a person is allowed to take a fee for inspecting, is a one-time fee. So that if he rules right now that it's a tam, he won't receive a second payment upon a second inspection later on. So with this takona in place, there's no incentive to rule either way, and therefore we can allow the taking of payment. The Mishnah is introduced by a topic heading on the outside margin, Netilas Schar Lodun Lohid, payment for acting as a judge or acting as a witness, Lahazois Ulekadesh Mechatas, or for sprinkling or mixing the ash of the red heifer, the red cow ash, with water. That's called likadesh, and the water is called mechatos. This involves someone who was tomei meis, someone who had defiled himself to the dead, became ritually impure, so he receives a sprinkling of a prepared water ash mixture. So we're going to deal with what about getting paid for the sprinkling or the preparation of that mechatos. The Mishnah Hanoitel Schoroi. One who takes a fee, Bodun, Dinov Betelim. If he takes a fee for acting as a judge, so his rulings are void. Lohid, a dosav betelim, or if he's taking a fee to act as a witness, so his testimony is void. Lahazoisu lekadesh, meimov meimora, ve'efro efer makle. The water is viewed as water from a cave, which means unacceptable water, and the efer, the ash, is viewed as a general ash from prepared from anything. Efer makle is as opposed to efer paraduma. Im hoya kohen umitamehu mitrumaso. If the person who is inspecting the bechor happens to be a kohen, and in order to get to the animal to inspect its mum, he had to become tomei, and as a result of becoming tomei, he can no longer eat of the truma tithe that kohanim receive, because in order to eat truma, kohen must be tohor. So ma'achilo umashkoi v'socho, the one who is bringing him, ostensibly the owner of the animal, the one who is bringing the kohen to the inspection site, must provide the kohen with food, because the kohen can't eat his regular truma now. He has to buy for him chulin food, which is more expensive, mashko, and offer him drink, v'socho, and enable him to be smeared with oils. The im hoya zokain markivo al hachamor. And if the kohen who is coming to inspect the mum, if the inspector happens to be a kohen, we said, so or let us say in general terms, if the inspector is an old individual, so markivo al hachamor, he provides transportation for him by giving him a donkey to ride on. V'noisein loy schoroi kepoyel. And he gets a fee like a worker. Now, this expression will be dealt with by the Gemara later on. Mino hanimili. From where do we know that a person is not to take a fee for acting as a dayan, for paskining, for ruling, issuing rulings? Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. The Omar Kro, the Posuk says, Re'ei limadati eschem. And the continuation of this is found in the Shita Mekubetzes Oisvov. It says, Chukim u'mishpatim kasher tzivani Hashem Elohim. And from this pasuk we learn, Ma ani b'chinam, just like the Almighty gave over Torah, the Torah to the Jewish people for nothing, in other words, for free of charge. Af atem b'chinam. So too, when you give over Torah, when you issue legal rulings that are, of course, all based on Torah, you too must do it without receiving a fee. Tanyo nami hochi. We have a Tanaic source which mentions this idea that was just mentioned by Rav. The Brisa says, Kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Ma ani b'chinam, just like the Almighty taught without receiving a fee, af atem b'chinam. So too, we who received the Almighty's Torah must continue also doing so without getting paid. Uminayin shim lo motzalu moy b'chinam shiyumad b'schar. From where do we know that a person who, let us say, is seeking to learn Torah and he can't find anyone to teach him gratis, that he must then, out of default or lack of choice, must pay? Talmud Lomar, Emes Kinei. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Emes, and the Torah is referred to as Emes. Emes is truth. Kinei, purchase it. Uminayin Shelo Yomar, and from where do we know that a person who should not say, Keshem Shelimaditio Bishar, Kachalamdeno Bishar, just like I learned it, Keshem Shelomaditio Bishar, just like I had to pay in order to learn, so too, I will not teach unless I get paid. Tamalomar emes kinei v'altimkor. Truth, meaning Torah, you're expected to buy, to pay for, but don't you turn around and go sell it for money. Rather, give it over free. Lahazois ulekadesh meimov meimora v'efer efer makle. Our Mishnah said that there is no money that is allowed to be paid for the preparation of the Pora Aduma water, nor its sprinkling. So there is, we'll say, no value associated with these matters of the Mei Paraduma. Ah, but we have a problem. We have a stira. And before going further in the Gemara, you'll notice under our topic heading of this section, the nosei is liyashev stira b'inyan netilas schar al kiddush v'hazoya shomei chatos. The Gemara's role is to resolve the upcoming seeming contradiction. So the Gemara raises a contradiction from a Tanaic source, Viraminu, Hamekadesh b'mei chatos b'efer chatos. Mekadesh here means to marry a woman, to offer a woman. As many of you know, marriage takes place when you offer a woman something of value, and in exchange for that, she agrees to accept the offer of marriage. So that's what hamekadesh means over here. So one who offers a woman mei chatos, hamekadesh b'mei chatos be'efer chatos, with the water of the poraduma water, or the ash of a poraduma, hare zu mekudeshes afapi shehu Yisrael, she will be considered married, even though the man offering her this happens to be a non kohen. Rashi points out the Kohanim were the ones that were usually involved with the preparation of the water and the sprinkling. But it's not binding that it be a Kohen. So we're saying here, even though he happens to be Israel, the offer of the Mei Chatos or the Efer Chatos to the woman, the term Chatos is a reference to the Pora Aduma, the red cow. So these waters, the prepared waters, or the ash, if offered to a woman in an attempt of marriage, it takes place. It's binding. Now, let us look at the Rashi. Hare zu mekudeshes, Rashi says, a few lines up from this point in the Gemara, Almo yochol lito schar. You see from here that that a person can get paid for the mei chatos or the efer chatos. How do we see that? The ilo, if a person can't get paid for these items, b'mai mekadesh lo, so then what is he offering the woman? He's offering, let us focus on the case of the mei chatos, the prepared water mixed with the ashes of the poraduma. What is he giving her of value? Now, if you say that a person is allowed to get paid for, let's say, for the preparation of these waters, so that when she gets these waters, she can then sell it to whatever agency wants to buy it, because it has value to it. In other words, one can get paid for these things. So how is it that our Mishnah says that one cannot get paid for the preparation of the waters, when this source says that a woman could be married through her receiving it? It must be something that she could get value from by offering it, by selling it, so that when giving the woman the mei chatos, you're giving her something of value, something she could convert into value. Omar Abaye, lo kashya. Abaye says there really is no contradiction. Kan bischar havo umilui, kan bischar hazo v'kiddush. When we talk about fees paid for this substance, we have to focus. It will be allowed if the fee is paid for Hava. Hava is the transportation, and Milui, the drawing of the water. The water used for the Mei Chatos comes from a live spring. So there's a certain amount of effort that one has to expend in order to draw the water. And there are transportation costs. Those costs are allowed to be paid. What is not allowed, what's usur, is schar hazor, to get paid for the sprinkling of the water on a person who is tamei, or getting paid for the kiddush. The kiddush is the adding of the ash into the water. To get paid for that activity, that would be forbidden. These are called hechsher mitzvah. These are called activities which help achieve a mitzvah, as opposed to the schar havon milui, that's already a further step away, we'll say, from achieving the mitzvah, and therefore one is allowed to receive payment for that. Deko nami, dekotoni hocha. In other words, by careful reading of these sources, we can see this chiluk that the Gemara just made. This chiluk meaning the distinction that the Gemara just made. Dekotoni hocha, it says over here, it says in our Mishnah, lehazos ulekadesh. That is for the act of sprinkling, or for the lekadesh meaning the act of mixing the ash with the water. That is what one is not allowed to receive payment for. V'hasam katoni, and there in the other source featuring the marriage, it said hamekadesh b'mei chatos ube'efer chatos. One who betroths, one who marries a woman through the mei chatos. So through the mechatos means through a value that is in the mechatos, but not the sprinkling of it. Rashi says the bimechatos expression is the mashma milui hamayim uba efer, and with regard to the efer, ikol ukmo bahavos efer, so that the expression of the Mishnah makash bimechatos uba efer chatos can convey the idea of the fee one would receive for the transportation of the mechatas or the efer chatas. And because of this language difference, Shema Mino, we conclude that there is a from the source itself we see the distinction that we made. Before going further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading under our no say heading, Hezber, an explanation, Laha Dikotoni Bamishnah. We need to explain that which was featured in the Mishnah, the Im Roya Hamumim Hu Kohen. If the inspector of the Mumim happened to be a Kohen, Yochol Letamos, he can become defiled. Umagila Matsav Shene Yochol Echol Betrumani. Then he achieves a state in which he can't eat Truma because of his Tuma. Vaha Kohen Muzer Shalo Letami Lemason. But we know that a Kohen is warned, even Bisman Azeh, not to expose himself to defilement through the dead. Let us now see the Gemara. Im hoyo koyin, if the mum inspector was a koyin, umetameu mitrumaso, and as a result of having to get to see the mum, he had to go through a place whereby he would become tamei, so and thereby become unable to eat the truma. The Mishnah said that the kohen must be supported with an alternative food supply. The Gemara asks, "V'kohen gufei hechi ozel umetamei." Hare koi belav. How is it that the kohen can go and expose himself to defilement when that involves himself in violation of a negative command? The Torah mentions lenefesh lo yitama, that a person is a kohen is not allowed to expose himself to tuma. So we have here two approaches. The Gemara answers number one, lebeis hapras the rabbanon. The tumah referred to here is a rabbinic level of tumah. Now, the rabbinic level of tumah will cause him to become unable to eat the truma. However, by exposing himself to a rabbinic type tumah, rabbinic means non-Torah, so that he's not in violation of what the Torah says, lenefesh lo yitama. So he is exposed to a tumah derabbanan, which does prevent him from eating the truma, but he's not in violation of the lav. What is a beis hapras? A beis hapras is a field in which a body was buried and subsequently plowed up, so that the body, the corpse that was in that field, is no longer intact, but rather it's become dismembered into small pieces. And the Gemara says, the Omer of Yehuda Amarav menapeach odom beis hapras v'hoylech. This is referring specifically to the case of someone on his way to do a korban Pesach. You know, it was the 14th of Nisan, and he needs to go from wherever he lives to the beis hamigdash. And in order to, the only route available for him is to go through a field that was plowed up that happened to have a grave in it beforehand. So there's a in order to avoid contact with a with a piece of bone that's the size of a barley grain, the individual is told to blow on the path that he's taking. In other words, use maybe a bellows or something, and to scatter the dirt on his route through this particular base hapras, this field that we describe. And the blowing action will cast aside from his path any small pieces of bone material that may have been on the path, thereby securing his status of tahara. It's pointed out that an etzem kisora is not mitame ba'oil. In other words, through overshadowing, he would not become tame. It would become tame through contact with the etzem kisora, but by practicing this minapeach, this blowing process, he thereby scatters the bones insofar as maintaining his status of purity with regard to the korban pesach. We don't rely on this, however, for allowing him to eat truma, and hence, going through the Beis HaPras in this fashion saves him, so to speak, from, he is not going to be in violation of the lav of Lenefesh Lo Yitamo. On the other hand, he loses his ability to eat truma. And that's why he has to be provided with it, with the chulin instead. There, at the top of Amud Beis, you'll notice a bracketed line and a half, just skipping that momentarily. This enables us to see answer number two immediately, Inami, another explanation of the Mishnah, which was the question we had raised: how is it that the Kohen is allowed to expose himself to Tumah? Is he not violating the lav of Lenefesh Lo Yitamo? So the Gemara answers that that prohibition is only with regard to defilement to the dead. However, defilement as a result of contact with a sheretz, let us say that this Kohen on his way to the inspection site became Tome Tumas Sheretz. So if that happened, he's not in violation of any negative command. However, he cannot eat Truma. Therefore, the Mishnah says he must be provided with an alternative supply of food. That's what the number two says, E Nami, Bishar Tumas Delo Mizar Alayo. Other types of Tuma, we used an example of Tumas Sheretz, that there is no Torah prohibition, Lo Mizar, there is no Torah prohibition concerning those other kinds of Tuma. Let us go over the bracketed section. Contained within the brackets is another point regarding Beis HaPras, but it's not of direct relevance to our discussion, so that's why we have it in brackets. So, reading the top line, V'Rav Yehuda Bar Ami Mishmei D'Rav Yehuda Omar, Beis HaPras Shenidash Tahor. A Beis HaPras, this is the field that happened to have a grave in it that was subsequently plowed up. If that field is also Nidash, is also trampled, so then it's completely Tahor. You apparently wouldn't need to have the menapeach process, because at that point there's no bone that's left intact. It's been trampled and crushed, and therefore you don't have a barley you don't have a bone even the size of a barley grain left intact. Continuing in the Gemara on the third line from the top, Vim hoya zoke markivoy al hachamor, and it went on to say in the Mishnah, v'noisein loy schoroi kepoyal, he gets paid like a worker. Tona, the brisa, very short brisa, but explains kepoyal botel, he gets paid an amount of money that a worker who is not doing his work would get paid. We'll explain that a little more momentarily. The Gemara goes on, Amar Abaye, kepoyal botel shel oisa melacha de botel mina. The amount that we're going to pay the person for inspecting the mum involves, first of all, determining what kind of work would he have been doing anyway. And accordingly, we will we'll adjust the sum in a certain way and then pay him. Let us explain a little further. If this person was involved in a type of work or income, occupation, that required a great expenditure of effort and energy, a person like that would be willing to take a fraction of his wages and get paid for something like this, for inspecting the mum, because when we say a fraction, means a relatively small fraction, because otherwise he would have had to expend a lot of effort in his own regular occupation. So to get paid for doing something of much less effort, he would be willing to take a sharp decrease in payment. However, and hence when he's being botel from the kind of melacha he ordinarily does, we take that into consideration. However, someone who is, as a result of inspecting the mum, is going to be taking off of his regular work that wouldn't have involved much expenditure of any energy anyway, so a person like that can expect to get compensated for inspecting the mum practically as much as he would have been making at his regular job, because at his regular job he wouldn't be so quick to take off from his regular job when he could have been making whatever salary he was making from doing something with little effort expenditure. The Mishnah. Before learning the Mishnah, we glance at the side under our topic heading, Hagbolos, restrictions, Hakshuros, that are associated with the following kinds of people. Lemi Shechashud, these are restrictions associated with people that are suspect of different things. And this introduction introduces basically the entire Omer of Gemara, taking into consideration the upcoming Mishnayos. So these are restrictions that we'll associate with people that are suspect of Al HaBechoros. They're suspect of violating the rules of Bechora. In other words, they're suspicious of slaughtering an unblemished animal and selling its meat as if it were from a blemished animal. In other words, they would be presenting the meat from as something that it's not. Likewise, Al HaShvius, Shemitah year. Shvius is the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year. During that year, a person is not allowed to conduct commerce in the produce of the Shemitah year, the seventh year of the agricultural cycle. And one who is choshed, one who is suspect of conducting commerce with Shvius, well, we'll have to deal with that kind of person. What do we have to say about that? And another type of suspect individual is Limkor Truma Bator Chulin, someone who would sell Truma as if it were Chulin. Truma, as we have mentioned numerous times in the past, is a tithe of produce given to a Kohen, and only a Kohen is allowed to eat it. So here we're dealing someone that's suspect of passing off Truma as if it were common produce, Chulin produce. And how do we deal with people like that? Let us now see the Mishnah. Hachoshud al HaBechoros. Someone who is suspect of violating the rules of Bechoros. Rashi says, Kigon Hachoshud lahatil mum b'bechor. Another type of suspicion. Someone who is suspect of imposing a blemish which on a firstborn male animal, and that's quite forbidden to do. Well, Ein lochid mimenu bosur tzvoyim. We don't buy from him deer meat, in English referred to as venison. It is a red meat that could easily be confused with calf meat. What we're afraid of is someone who would sell b'chor tam meat, unblemished b'chor meat. A person would have, this kind of suspicious individual would do something like this. He would sell unblemished b'chor meat and pass it off as, oh, this is deer, this is venison. V'loy oirois she'enon avudim. One is not allowed to buy from a choshed ala b'choros untanned skins, animal skins. Rabbi Elezer Omer, loichun menu oros shel nekeva. Rabbi Elezer says one would be allowed to buy skins from female animals. The ein loichin mimenu, probably the Tanakhama continues at this point and says, you can't buy from him semer melubon vitsoyi, cannot buy wool, whether it be whitened or tzoi, dirty. Avo loichen mimenu tovi ubegodim. But one can buy spun wool and prepared clothing. The Mishnah will address, the Gemara itself will address the details featured in this Mishnah. Boser tzvoyim, why is it forbidden to buy from him? The michlef b'de'egla, it can be confused with calf meat. In other words, the customers, the public could be misled, could be confused, and think that this is deer meat when in fact it is from a calf, a firstborn male animal. V'loy oirois she'enon avudim, and the Mishnah said we don't buy from him raw skins, untanned skins. Ha avudim zavninon, but we can easily infer from the Mishnah that if you are buying from a person, even if he happens to be choshen on b'choros, you are buying from him tanned leather, that would be allowed. My time off. Why is this allowed? Why is there this distinction? So the Gemara explains, im isa de b'chor have, if the leather came from an actual b'chor, lo have a torach bay, he wouldn't have invested the efforts required for tanning leather. Savar, he would figure, ishamu bi rabbonon, if the rabbis get wind of this being from a b'chor, mafsidu li minoi, they will declare it forbidden. They'll cause me a loss. In other words, they'll declare it forbidden, and then I will lose all of the efforts that I expended in preparing the skins and tanning them. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Loikin Mimenu Oros Shel Nekeva. My time. Why does Rabbi Eliezer allow the purchase of female skins from female animals? Answer. Meida Yadia. You can see the difference in the skin between a male and female. There is the part of the skin that's associated with the organs of gender, in which you can clearly see the difference. And as we've mentioned in the past, the din of Bechor applies only to firstborn male animals, not female animals. Well, we have this leniency on the part of Rabbi Eliezer. What about the first opinion, the Tanakama? He doesn't make this distinction. Vitanakama, why is it that he forbids the purchase of all untanned skins? Im kain, zohar nami, if there would be an allowance to buy female skins, then with regard to male skins also, chayik lizachruse, he will carve away the part of the skin that ordinarily reveals its male gender. Hayek is to carve away, cut away, and so it won't be so obvious that this is specifically male skin, and therefore we have to ban an across the boards prohibition. We have to make an across the boards prohibition regarding all skins. Because if we would have this distinction, he would take the male skins from firstborns, which are forbidden, and pass them off as female skins. And if, as far as the gender recognition, no, he will carve that away, leaving it unrecognizable as a male skin. He'll do that, the Omar, and he'll claim achborim achluha. Oh, if you notice why there's a hole over here, this was eaten by the mice. And therefore, since if we would allow female sales, female skin sales, it would give him an incentive to carve away the male gender area and present it as skins that were eaten by the mice. V'idach be achborim meida yedia. Rabbi Lezer, who does allow that, he says if it were to be eaten by mice, that would be recognizable as being nibbled on by the mice. Someone would see that it's not a female skin, and therefore I can afford, says Rabbi Lezer, I can afford to allow the sale of female skins. He won't have any excuse that he could give regarding a male skin that would lead people to think that it's allowed. V'ein lochin mimenu tsemer meluban v'tsoyi. Hashto tsemer meluban lo zavninon tsoyi mibaya. Once the Mishnah tells me that I'm not allowed to buy from him even whitened skins, certainly dirty skins will be forbidden. The svara behind this question is that in order to achieve libun, a whitening of the skin, one has to expend efforts and energy. And if we're saying that even though he goes through this expenditure of effort and tircha, and still one is not allowed to buy from him wool that's been whitened, certainly debris-filled wool, which he didn't expend any energy over, certainly that will be prohibited. Why does the Mishnah have to spell out the prohibition of tsoi after it tells us that there's a prohibition of buying even whitened wool, when otherwise one would think that he'd have an incentive not to sell b'chor whitened wool, because if he's caught, they would cause him a loss of all of those energies, and yet we see that that is prohibited. So certainly, when there's no expenditure of effort, where he has no incentive to act properly, certainly that shall be forbidden. So the Gemara explains Elo Chado Kotoni. The Mishnah isn't featuring two separate cases, but rather Tzemer Milubon Mi Tso Oso. The Mishnah is referring to the case of whitened wool. And the Mishnah is telling us that even whitened wool is forbidden to buy. Whitened means whitened, cleaned from the debris that was there. So the issue of seeming redundancy falls away, because the Mishnah is not featuring two cases. It's featuring one case, and the case of dirty wool follows logically on our own. We can see how that certainly would be forbidden. But as far as the issue of why teach two cases, that we answer that the Mishnah is really teaching only one case. Avol loichin mimenu tevi tovi ve'ubegodim. One is allowed to buy from him spun wool and ready-made clothing. Hashto, the Gemara asks, tovi zavninon begodim mibaya. Similar to the question that was raised before. Notice once you're told one, do I need to be told the other? Once I'm told, in this case we're going in the direction of allowance, once I'm told that spun wool is allowed to be purchased, because of the deterrent he would have in spinning b'chor wool, as we mentioned before, if he's caught, it would be declared forbidden to buy. So there has a built-in deterrent because of the efforts he expends in spinning the wool. Now, but spinning the wool involves less effort expenditure than preparing full ready-made clothing. So if we're telling you that one is allowed to buy even something which involves less effort expenditure, certainly one would be allowed to buy that which involved greater efforts. So why does the Mishnah have to tell me, after explaining that you can buy spun wool, why does it spell out you can buy ready-made clothing from him? So the Gemara answers, my begodim, the case of begodim is nimti. Nimti are clothing made from wool fibers, possibly felt, something that didn't go through a spinning process, so that you don't have this particular, it's not a latter stage of processing, but rather the Mishnah is referring to two separate kinds of wool treatment. One is spinning the wool, and the other is making clothing that don't go through a spinning stage. The Mishnah, Hechoshud al Hashvius ein lochin mimenu pishton. Someone who is suspect concerning violation of the rules of the Shemitah year, you don't buy from him flax. Flax is the raw material from which linens are made. Vafilu sorak. You're not allowed to buy from him Pishtan, even if it happened to be Sorak, Rashi says, Kosush umesukan b'masreik. It's flax that have been crushed, thereby making enabling the fibers to be exposed, and then combed. So even though some expenditure of effort has been made, that's still not a sufficient amount to deter him from selling flax that were cultivated during the Shemitah year, which is forbidden, and trying to pass it off as from another year. One is allowed to buy from someone who's choshan shvius, linens that have been, the fibers have been spun and woven. It might be pointed out, well, the Gemara asks, Hashto tovi zavininan oreg mibaya, if you're allowed to buy something that reached only the spun stage, the tovi stage, then it's obvious you can buy something that reached the oreg stage. Oreg is something that's woven. Generally speaking, we're assuming that one weaves only that which had already been spun. So if you're allowed to buy something from him that went through the earlier stage, certainly if it went through a later stage as well. So the Gemara answers the expression here of tovi that is allowed the orig, sorry, the not the tovi, but the orig, my orig, tichi. Rashi explains, tichi are sharshuros, a type of braided work, shikorin, and Rashi gives a French expression, the oisin oison mi pishton ad shalom nitfe. This tichi is made from non-spun flax fibers. So that orig is something, it's not a later stage of fabric preparation. It's a type of preparation that didn't, orig is something that didn't go through the tovi stage. Therefore, the question of the Gemara falls away, and we don't have a something that's redundant in the Mishnah. Hechoshud lios mocher truma l'shem chulin. Someone who is suspect of selling truma as if it were chulin, Ein lokhin mimeno afilu mayim umelach, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Because of this knas that we impose on him, a fine that we impose upon him, we don't allow the purchase of even water nor salt, items that could not be from truma in the first place. Truma is a tithe made from agricultural produce, not water nor salt. But in our interest of coming down on the individual, fining the individual, we restrict the public from purchasing from him even mayim and melch, even water and salt. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol shiesh bo zikas truma u'maisris ein lokhin mimeno. Rabbi Shimon is more lenient in his ruling, and he says anything that has an association with truma and maisris, one is not allowed to buy. However, water and salt would be allowed because they have no connection to the realm of tithes. So the Gemara asks regarding the word kol that Rabbi Shimon just mentioned, la'asuye mai, what is that coming to include? Answer, la'asuye, to include kirve dogim, fish innards, de ma'arvi behu shemen zayis. There would be a type of food preparation in which people would mix olive oil with fish innards. That is something that has a truma and meiser association, the olive oil that's in there. Olive oil is something from which one does separate tithes. So that if you have a food preparation that part of its ingredients is, in this case, olive oil, you would not be allowed to buy that from a choshed on truma. That's an explanation of what Rav Shimon said. The Gemara now relates an incident. Hahu tabcha dava choshed lizvuni tarbo di atma. Since our Mishnah is dealing with people that are suspect, here we feature someone suspect of selling tarbo di atma, that's forbidden fats from an animal, fats that come from the kidney region. Rashi calls it chelev hakloyos. Bemor and as if it were the kanto. So we have a butcher that was selling forbidden fats as if they were chilev tohar. Kanto, for our purpose, is a reference to the entrails, different parts of the animal that they have chilev associated with them, but it's not prohibited chilev, it's mutter chilev, it's allowed chilev. Just by the way, the chilev that is forbidden in the Torah carries with it a penalty known as kores. The kores penalty is viewed as a very severe penalty. There are different interpretations of exactly what kores is. It may be dying young, or dying without children, or one's children dying on him. Whatever the case is, it's called the kores penalty. So what we have here is someone that's selling to the public kores level fats as if they were kosher fats. Well, when he was caught, Kansei Rava Lizvuni Afilu Amguzi. Rava then imposed upon him a fine or a restriction that you can't buy from him even nuts. Amar Lei Rav Popo LeRava Keman. This ruling that Rava imposed on him is based on whom? Kerebi Yehuda. It would seem that it's based on Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda, we saw in the Mishnah that said someone who is suspect in the case of Truma, you can't buy from him even Mayim Umelach. So, which is pretty much not associated with Truma itself, but it's a fine, an across the board fine imposition. Well, so Rav Popa continues in his question to Rav. He says, well, if you're based on Reb Yehuda, then why is your fine restricted to nuts? Then you should have banned the purchase from this individual even of water and salt. So the Gemara answers, La'olam Rabbi Shimon. Rava's ruling here is in fact in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. And if you recall, Rabbi Shimon said that we impose restrictions on buying items that are vaguely related to the area in which he is in violation. Well, you'll ask, we have to ask here, how in the world are nuts associated with animal fats? Yet the Gemara says, "Ube isura gufei kansinale." As we will see in a moment, the nuts are actually relevant to the forbidden fats themselves. How is that? The Gemara explains. Stam dardiki goru bamguzi. Your rank and file dardik, your children, are goru. They are enticed. They can be enticed or seduced with nuts. If you want to attract a child to you, all you have to do is offer him nuts, and you'll have him eating out of your hand, so to speak. The Ozil, now this guy who's suspect in our story of selling the forbidden fats as if they were kosher, the Ozil umishabish livnei tabri, he then goes and misleads the children of kosher butchers, of upright, proper meat producers, vigoru luhu bamguzi, and he bribes the children of the tabochim, of the other proper butchers. The butchers, naturally, they slaughter and cut up entire animals. In the animals that the butcher is cutting up, there are forbidden fats. So this fellow, this suspect individual, he will offer nuts to the children of the upright butchers and say, listen, take these, in exchange for these nuts, I want you to go and bring for me from your father's all the forbidden fats that he happens to be cutting away. Umaisu le tarba, and they bring to him, in exchange for the anguzi, in exchange for the nuts, these kids will bring from their fathers the tarba de atma, the fat from the kidneys, which is forbidden. Umazvin le, and then he goes and sells it, this swindler goes and sells those forbidden fats that he is supplied with through the nut bribe. He then goes and sells them b'mor dekanta. More means in exchange or posing as something else, as posing as kosher type fats. So you can see that the nuts are not like Mayim and Melach. It's not a representation of some type across the board fine, but rather it's a fine directly associated with the forbidden fats. True, it's not meat material itself, but it was the means of getting the forbidden fats, and hence the ruling of Rava is in line with Rebbe Shimon. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.